Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 101 event, which takes place in Melbourne, Australia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Now, this podcast is going to be a bit more condensed than the usual show. We're filming it late Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, and we'd like to spend the day with our family, so just bear with us here. Now, looking back at our last event, we went 3-3 on our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 99 and UFC Fight Night 100, which took place on the same day, to profit 0.45 units overall, although we did lose our half-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 101 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night in America and on Sunday in Australia. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a flyweight contest between Yao Zakui, who is 2-4, and Janelle Lausa, who is 6-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Lausa, minus 175, the comeback on Zakui at plus 135 right now over our sponsor, Sportsbook, 5dimes.eu. There has been a little bit of movement. It is Lausa minus 135. The comeback on Zakui is at plus 115, so a little bit more action coming in on the dog. This should be a fairly close fight. Starting off with Lausa first, a lot of people probably are unfamiliar with him. He is a pretty talented prospect. I mean, age 28, a 6-2 record. He's definitely still raw, but I'm impressed with what I've seen on tape so far. He's got a boxing and BJJ background, has some nice wrestling and takedown skill. I really like his timing with his double leg takedown. Nice guillotine choke on the ground as well. So he's got some submission skill. He's got some wrestling. He's got some stand-up skill. He's shown some good ability to sprawl and brawl if taken down. He could potentially get back up to his feet pretty well. So he scrambles up well. And the guy, again, very technically sound. He's just a little bit raw. And Zakui, he's another guy that obviously he's a tough vet. He's one of these guys that's powerful, aggressive, underrated, honestly, as a flyweight. He pushes a high pace, powerful on the feet. He's capable of hitting some takedowns along the way as well. And he's even come over here and trained with a Black Zillion camp. So he's getting some decent training in. Again, you got to kind of throw the records out the windows here. 6-2 guy in Lausa. And then again, Zakui is at 2-4. So I think they're both better than the record indicates. So I think it's going to come down to a decision more than likely in this fight. Zakui is going to be the one pushing maybe a little bit of a higher pace, but Lausa is going to be the one that's a little bit more technically sound, and I think he's going to probably win the stand-up battle. So I'm slightly leaning a little bit more towards Lausa on this fight. I think he's probably just going to be a little bit more technical and a little bit better overall, but it will be a coin flip type of fight. So Lausa is my official pick.
Lausa is not exactly a world beater, but the one thing you do have to keep in mind is this fight was supposed to take place on that canceled Philippines card, and Lausa was the debuting fighter out of the Philippines. So at least theoretically, you would think the UFC would have wanted the hometown guy to pick up a win in his UFC debut in the Philippines. So I'm not shocked that Lausa's favored here. Zakui has not exactly impressed inside the octagon. His last performance did not go well, and it was a year ago, so he's been out of action for a while now, but got taken down and then injured his arm, and the fight was stopped, basically. So this time around, I don't expect Lausa to be the aggressive wrestler like Serrano was, but Lausa should have the technical striking edge. He does have a really strong boxing background, so if this is a pure stand-up fight, I think Zakui will have the aggression, but Lausa will have the technique. And you don't discount aggression, because sometimes if a guy just pushes a high enough pace, then that can help them win a decision. I do think, actually, that Zakui is a little bit more well-rounded than Lausa, but he does lack in technique. And he's more of that
master of none, jack of all trades type of guy. Zakui, the one thing that is the big question mark in this fight is how much has he improved? Like, we don't know. It's been a year since we've seen him. I mean, part of that year was spent recovering from his injured arm, but for the most part, he could have really taken his game to the next level. I mean, it's not like he's ancient. I mean, he's 25 years old, and he does seem to have a good work ethic. So if Zakui has really expanded his skill set and improved drastically, like, this could be a blowout win for him. But if Zakui's at about the same level as he was the last time we saw him, and he hasn't taken a lot of strides, then this is a very winnable fight for Lauza. So I'm going to side with Lauza, but I am not going crazy on anything here. I'm probably just going to pass. So, but Janelle Lauza is going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Marlon Vera, who is 7-3-1, taking on Ning Guangyu, who is 6-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Vera, minus 140, the comeback on Gunyao at plus 100, so even money over there. Now, over at Five Dimes, it is Vera minus, or I'm sorry, Gunyao is minus 140. Vera is plus 120. That's right. I forgot. They flipped the line. Everybody came in on Gunyao early on, and it's holding steady right now with Gunyao as the favorite. I'm a little bit surprised because this line did get posted before, and it seemed to settle with Vera as the small favorite, like at about $1.30 or so. So this time around, it's not the case. Everybody coming in towards Gunyao. You know, I mean, this is another competitive fight. We were talking about the last fight, but this is another one that's really similar. Gunyao, another one of these powerful, short, powerful, stocky guys that his aggression and his ability to push a high pace and get some takedowns and ragdoll people at times. I mean, he's well-rounded. He doesn't really excel at anything, but again, he's got power on the feet, and his aggression and the ability to kind of grind people out is pretty impressive. He's got some decent I mean, for being a 6-3 type of fighter, he's won half those fights by knockout. So he does have some decent power, and he's got the ability, again, to just be so aggressive that you got to love his fighting style. Vera, on the other hand, I mean, he's shown flashes at times of actually being a pretty good fighter, a pretty complete fighter. His ability on the ground is a little bit better, I think, than his stand-up game overall, but he is getting better. He's training at Jackson's camp, and I think that's – fight by fight, you see some improvements from Vera overall. He's going to have a significant reach advantage in this fight. I believe he's going to be like 4 inches taller and maybe 6 inches of actual pure reach overall. So Gunyao is going to be the aggressor here. He's going to be coming in, of course, looking for some takedowns along the way. Vera, again, has a decent ground game. He's been working his takedown ability, takedown sprawl and brawl, takedown defense ability has improved a little bit. I don't think he's going to be able to get on top of Gunyao. But with all that being said, I still think as the fight goes, Vera's length on the feet could give Gunyao a little bit of problems. And then even on the ground, I think Vera's getting to the point where he's getting good enough that he could probably scramble back out of a bad position and make this fight interesting, or at least attack, you know, with a submission game to make it interesting as well. So I'm going to slightly lean the other way. I mean, everybody coming in on Gunyao like he already won the fight. I don't know. I think this is kind of a coin flip type of fight to me. I'm going to lean the other way, go against everybody and pick Vera to win this fight. Again, obviously it's not a huge confidence pick because both these guys are very flawed, but I still like what I see as far as progression for Vera's game. So I'm going to go his way.
I haven't been that impressed with Vera's progression. I mean, the main thing that we've known about him since the beginning was he has an active game on the ground, especially if he's on his back, and he has a decent kicking game overall. And I don't expect Guangyu to really let him get either of those going, because Guangyu is probably not going to be looking for takedowns. So I think that takes Vera's ground game out of the equation, because he is not a real takedown threat, does not have very good wrestling for the most part. If the fight goes to the floor, it's because Vera got taken down, or maybe even Vera pulls guard. And I don't see him having success with either of those. Now, on the feet, Vera should have the reach and size advantage by far. I mean, Guangyu definitely has tiny T-Rex arms. Vera actually has a pretty good reach, really good reach, actually, for the bantamweight division. And he does possess a pretty solid kicking game. But Vera's hands are not that impressive overall. Like, I have not been – there's really nothing that he's done with his hands that that shocked me or, you know, made me stop in my tracks. Now, Guang Yu, on the other hand, he definitely has some pop in his hands. You saw that with his knockout win over Royston Wei. He had several knockout wins on Tough China. So he clearly, if he, you know, just goes for it, he can put people out. Now, I'm not saying he'll knock out Vera, because Vera's been pretty tough in there so far. I haven't really seen him in a lot of trouble in the UFC, even though he hasn't performed that well. For the most part, if Guang Yu just pushes the pace and is continuously threatening Vera with his power, then I think Vera could get himself in some trouble, like just in regards to output. And maybe he'd be a little concerned to go for some things because of the threat of Guang Yu's power. So I'm not crazy confident about this fight, because Vera is probably the more well-rounded of the two, even if he can't utilize some of his game. So I'm going to side with Guang Yu, but not confidently. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Dan Hooker, who is 14-6, taking on Jason Knight, who is 17-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Hooker -170, the comeback on Knight +130. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's -150 for Hooker. The comeback on Knight is at +130. So line margins have tightened up a little bit here in this spot. Two-way action coming in, and this should be a competitive fight. I think the more of the public opinion out there is leaning towards Hooker. Again, talk about improvement. I mean, you see the improvement in Hooker's game. He's only 26 years old, and fight by fight now, he's getting some great experience in the UFC. I mean, he's pulling off some decent wins. I mean, even if like, for example, the Hayoki win, he was losing that fight, but he pulled it out. But again, that gave him a little bit of confidence as well. I think to boost his career and kind of set him on the right track. And since that time, I mean, his win over, again, Adiva was pretty impressive in his last fight. I mean, how quickly he was able to dispatch him. I mean, that was even more amazing, to be honest with you, how slick that sub was. But before that, he even lost a decision to Yair, and Yair Rodriguez right now, we all know, is on a different level as far as hype and the way that UFC's pushing him as well. The guy is a huge prospect. So Hooker, even though he lost that fight pretty clear, he still hung in there and showed some life against one of the up-and-coming guys in that division. So I think overall, Hooker, fight by fight, again, confidence-wise, skill-wise, he's improving. He's definitely put the work in, and it shows. But, man, this is a tough fight with Knight. Jason Knight has definitely all the skills to match Hooker in a lot of areas. Now, of course, Hooker's going to have a little bit of reach. He's going to have 4 inches of pure reach. He's going to be a little bit taller, but skill set for skill set. I think Hooker's a little bit more savvy on the feet than Knight, but Knight does pack a little bit of a punch. I mean, he's not going to back down at all. I mean, he's going to keep an aggressive pace as well, even if it is on the feet. Knight's ground game, I think, is better a little bit farther ahead than his stand-up game overall. So Hooker, regardless of where this fight takes place, he's not going to have an easy fight. Knight's going to bring it. I mean, in my opinion, his fight was very impressive against Ehlers in the last fight. Of course, he made a short notice debut against Kawajiri and lost a decision. But I mean, especially early on, he made things interesting even in that fight. Of course, Kawajiri just stylistically a tough matchup. Hooker doesn't have the wrestling Kawajiri does. So I do believe that this fight's going to be pretty even. I mean, it's going to be back and forth. Both these guys are going to push each other to the max. And I'm actually going to go against the grain here as well. And I'm going to side with Knight. I know, again, popular opinion is probably going to be on Hooker, but I think it's going to be one of these fights that it's going to be a close decision, but I think Knight's going to be a little bit more impressive. So I got to lean his way. I think he gets a nod on the scorecards.
Both fighters are talented on the ground, and both fighters have some power in their hands and can push a pretty high pace. So I expect it to be very evenly matched. I was actually really impressed with Jason Knight in his last fight. I mean, a lot of people did not expect him to pull off the win there against Jim Ehlers, but he went out there and he just outpaced Ehlers. I mean, he got taken down a few times, but outstruck him and won the fight, a split decision. And Dan Hooker, on the other hand, I mean, he's definitely capable of, you know, impressive finishes. I mean, you saw that in his UFC debut when he survived Entwistle's leg lock attempts and then put him out. You saw that with his knockout of Hatsuhiyoki, which was crazy impressive. And then you saw that most recently when he submitted Mark Adiva in just a couple, like a minute, basically. I mean, that was really early in the first round. But one thing you do have to remember is in between all those wins, he has been picked apart on the feet by Maximo Blanco. And then he lost the first two rounds against Yair Rodriguez before Rodriguez faded a little bit. So it granted, those guys are pretty solid overall fighters and good athletic strikers, but I think the precedent is there for fighters that can push a pace and maybe put some pressure on Hooker. He doesn't respond incredibly well unless he can land a big haymaker like he did against Kiyoki. So unless he lands that big haymaker on Jason Knight, I think even though Knight's game primarily historically has been focused on submissions, he showed that his striking is definitely coming along in that last fight, and I think he can outwork Dan Hooker over the course of three rounds on the feet. And if it goes to the floor, Hooker probably gets top position, but I think Knight will just be constantly threatening with submissions and will just make Hooker's entire fight just incredibly annoying. Maybe threatening with sweeps, threatening with submissions, just constantly having that threat. So I'm going to side with Jason Knight as well. I think that he'll just push a high enough pace that maybe Hooker just won't be able to keep up with it. So Jason Knight is my pick. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a flyweight contest between Ben Wen, who is 15-6, and Gene Herrera, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up and Wen, minus 165. The comeback on Herrera at plus 125. Looking over at Five Dimes right now, it's actually Herrera minus 135. The comeback on Wen is at plus 115. Herrera was a little bit higher than that as well. So action coming back on Wen to make it even a little bit closer to the opener. But still a line flipped here. Everybody on Herrera on this fight overall as far as the betting community goes. Early on, at least. I mean, I'm sure we'll see some love continue to come in back on Wen. But what a tough fight. I mean, both these guys, I think, for the flyweight division have a lot to offer, and I enjoy watching these guys both perform. So it's not like you're seeing cans out there. I mean, these guys are going to bring it. These guys are skilled. These guys are finishers. There's a lot to like about this fight. It should be exciting. I think a lot of people are kind of coming in Herrera's way a little bit because I believe, again, it's just a guess, but my belief is that a lot of people think Wen is going to probably maybe look strong in round one and then fade as the fight goes on, and Herrera is going to take over and probably finish him or at least win two out of three rounds if it goes that long. I think that's what the mindset is for most people out there. So Wen, I'm sure they got some respect for him, but I just think that, you know, and again, I mean, you can't base on everything off of a performance or two, but that Smoka fight, that was a battle. That was one of the best ground battles I've seen in a long time. I mean, both guys, Smoka and Wen, just phenomenal on the ground, just a back and forth war. But that was a very tough, hard paced fight. I mean, that's not the type of fight that he's going to get against Herrera. Not that it's going to be easy, but still the grappling exchanges that those guys had, it'll wear you out even more so. So I think Wen is probably going to have a little bit more gas in the tank against Herrera here. And if so, man, I really think that he's a little bit better right now. I mean, again, I do have respect for Herrera's striking game. He's got some power on the feet. He's technically sound for sure. I do got respect for his ground game as well. But I think Wen, as far as the wrestling goes, I think Wen is a more dangerous fighter on the feet as well. He's just a little bit ahead of Herrera overall. So again, another kind of coin flip of a fight in my opinion, because you got two promising young flyweights going at it here that I think it could realistically go either way. But I got to side with Wen. I think everybody's kind of counting him out a little bit in this fight, and I think I've been nothing but impressed. So far in the UFC, I mean, Wen's been fun to watch. He's performed at a high level. I mean, I know that's, again, he lost a smoke in his last fight, but, I mean, outside of that, the guys look phenomenal. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I think he actually beats Herrera here, so I'm going to pick him to win.
Technically, Ben Wen has Gene Herrera beat everywhere. He is the superior striker. He pushes a higher pace. He throws more volume. I think he mixes it up on the feet better with punches, kicks, elbows, knees. I think he's stronger on the inside in the clinch. On the ground, I think it's competitive, but Wen showed incredible scrambling ability against Luis Smoka, who is a tremendous ground fighter in his own right. And Wen was getting the better of him early. It was just the Smoka just is a cardio machine and was just able to outlast Wen a little bit because they were just fighting pedal to the metal, you know, just 500 miles an hour, and Wen couldn't keep up. Now, if the pace of this fight is a little bit slower, then I think Wen will be just fine. I don't expect him to fade or do anything like that this time around. Plus, he did take a lot of damage late in the first round against Smoka, and I think that did affect him the rest of that fight. Now, Gene Herrera, The biggest thing he's got going for him is he does pack a serious wallop in his hands. Now, he's not as technical as Wen, but Wen has been knocked out or TKO'd 5 times. So if Herrera can connect really solidly with something, then there's definitely a chance that Herrera could win this fight. But that being said, I think Wen, as long as he could just avoid that big power shot, I expect him to get the better of Herrera on the feet. I expect him to get the better of Herrera on the inside. And I think he gets the better of Herrera on the ground. The main thing is avoiding the power, and hopefully he doesn't gas. But as long as that happens, then I think Ben Wen is in a good position to not just win, but potentially win really impressively. So my pick is going to be Ben Wen. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Rich Walsh, who is 9-5, taking on Jonathan Mounier, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this fight exactly pick minus 120 either way. Everybody hopping on Mounier early on, and they think, man, it's a ridiculously easy line to bet, I guess, because it climbed up close to 2-1. I don't think it quite got there, but still, I mean, it was kind of trending towards around 2-1 for Mounier in this spot. And now it's come all the way back down at the line right now. 5 dimes is Mounier minus 135. The comeback on Walsh plus 115. Look, I get it. I mean, a lot of respect out there doesn't go to Walsh. I mean, it's typically on a lot of cards. I mean, Walsh is one of these guys. He's, again, an Ultimate Fighter veteran. He just not one type of or not the guy that people want to get behind. I mean, he doesn't have a skill set anywhere to overwhelm you or to just love his fighting style. But the truth is the guy – is definitely a tough out. I mean, he does push a high pace. He's powerful. He's not a slouch anywhere the fight takes place, but he's beatable, of course. Mounier, on the other hand, is one of these guys from TriStar that does have a lot of hype. He's got some size for the welterweight division as well. So he's had some hype even coming into his UFC debut against Covington. And he took that fight on short notice against an outstanding wrestler. And of course, he got out wrestled in that fight and he lost that fight. But that being said, you know, I mean, we really haven't seen what Mounier is capable of offering. I mean, overall, what we do know about him so far is he's an unorthodox striker. He has a kickboxing background, a BJJ blue belt, I believe, is what he's got as far as pure jiu-jitsu skill. And he's been definitely working on his wrestling and BJJ. So it's not bad. I mean, he's definitely skilled everywhere the fight takes place. And again, his striking with his length on the feet is something to be reckoned with, because he's definitely a skilled fighter there. His takedown defense is not bad. I mean, against Covington, again, it's Covington, so it's not going to be that way against Walsh. Walsh is not going to have that much success against Mounier here. Even if he gets a takedown or so, he's not going to have the type of success Covington had, because Mounier actually fought off a lot of decent takedowns against Covington. So I was actually impressed with it overall, considering the situation for him there. So, but with all that being said, I still think Walsh is the type of fighter that's going to be in Mounier's face. He's going to push a high pace. And he's going to make this a fight. It's not going to be a blowout by any means. But I do have to lean a little bit more towards Mounier here. I kind of want to go against the grain here. But I do think that Mounier has a little bit more upside to him overall. And I think, again, he's got an easier fight, I guess, in Covington for him. That stylistically matches up a little bit better with Walsh. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Walsh kind of steps in there and makes this a fight, steals a gritty type of decision, a close competitive fight, or even maybe finishes Mounier along the way, you know? So I wouldn't be shocked. I just think this fight's going to be a lot more competitive than most of us think. But overall, I still have to side a little bit towards Mounier. So, you know, we could be wrong here. I think everybody else just kind of underestimated, again, Walsh a little bit too much. I'm expecting it to be a little bit closer, but I still got to lean his way. So I'm picking Mounier.
We didn't learn much from Mounier's UFC debut. He landed a couple strikes, but for the most part, he was just taken down repeatedly by Colby Covington. He even got rocked by a spinning back fist from Covington, and then eventually he got submitted in the third round. But that being said, I do think he's a lot better than he showed in that fight. Rich Walsh, on the other hand, he's had an up-and-down UFC career. None of his wins have been very impressive inside the octagon. I don't think any of his victories were over anybody that's still in the UFC. And when he has stepped up in competition, it hasn't ended very, very well. I mean, you saw in his last couple fights, Alan Joban was able to just destroy him. And then Viscardi Andrade was able to win a unanimous decision against him with 5 takedowns. So Walsh, He does have a youth on his side, even though he doesn't look it. I mean, he looks and fights like he's in his late 30s. He's not particularly fast, but he does have some power. He does have a little bit of wrestling ability. Nothing super impressive, but for the most part, he's just a mildly well-rounded fighter that is basically fighting in his backyard, has nothing to lose. So I wouldn't be going all in here on Mounier, especially after how poor Mounier's UFC debut went. But I do think that Mounier will be a lot better this time around. He's not facing someone that he is super concerned about the takedown against. So I think Mounier's striking is going to look a lot better. He should be the quicker fighter with a slightly longer reach. And if he can utilize any of that, then he should be in a pretty good position to pick up maybe a TKO victory. But don't count out Walsh, especially a guy with his back against the wall fighting in his home country. So I'm siding with Mounier, but I'm not super confident about it because, again, he did not show much in his UFC debut. So there's not a lot to go off of here. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Damian Brown, who is 16-9, taking on John Tuck, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Good fight. I opened Tuck minus 185, the comeback on Brown at plus 145. Right now, over five dimes, it is currently Tuck minus 145. The comeback on Brown is at plus 125. So more love coming in on Brown. I am a little surprised. I mean, Damian Brown deserves to get a little bit of respect, more respect than typically he gets, but here he did get some love and respect against Tuck. So I am a little surprised. I figured that people would favor Tuck a little bit more. I do think this is going to be a lot closer of a fight than most people think. But again, the people that came on Brown obviously believe that is the case as well. And Damian Brown is one of these guys that's been around for a long time, a savvy veteran. Of course, he's fought in Cage Warriors and overseas for a while. And actually, even before he made his UFC debut, he's fought some decent competition. So it's not like he's fought all bums before. I mean, he's progressed in his career nicely as far as getting that experience and just kind of. I think right now he's at the peak of his career. He's been putting in the work. He got the UFC shot. He took full advantage. I mean, in his last fight against Arzamendia, I mean, that was really impressive. I wasn't even surprised. Actually, I think Brian and I both picked him and bet him, I believe, in that fight too. So not surprising at all. Brown is definitely better than, again, his record currently indicates. But he's got a fight here against Tuck. I mean, Tuck is one of these guys that has been on the radar. I mean, obviously since the Ultimate Fighter as well, a lot of people believe that he was going to make some serious noise in the lightweight division because he does have a well-rounded skill set. On the feet, Tuck has some skill. He's got power on the feet as well. And the ground, the guy has some submission skill. He's got some decent takedown defense. So everywhere the fight takes place, Tuck can beat you. I mean, he's talented enough and he trains at a good camp even. I mean, with Alliance and those guys, I know he's floated around a little bit, but still, I mean, a lot of things to like about Tuck, but somehow, some way. I mean, part of it's his cardio it's been a little bit of a letdown. He manages to kind of not perform at his best at times. I mean, so Tuck has been kind of up and down like a little roller coaster ride in his career thus far. His last fight against Emmett was actually not bad because I think Emmett's actually a pretty good fighter, a solid fighter. And stylistically, he was a tough matchup, even if Emmett was taking that on short notice. And Tuck turned it on and made it interesting, especially later in the fight. So I give him a little benefit of the doubt there, but again, he's been up and down in his wins over Bang and Lindsay, basically pretty much the highlight of his career thus far. So I think a win over Brown here would be actually pretty solid for him. And I think he probably does get it done. I mean, I'm not, again, another spot where you can't be all that confident because Brown is going to look to take this fight to the ground. And on the ground, I think Brown is definitely going to have the edge. He's going to be able to control. I don't think he's going to be able to finish Tuck on the ground. But again, getting the fight to the ground, even if it's minimal at times in a competitive fight, will probably steal a round or two. So this is going to be a competitive fight. I just think on the feet, Tuck has the edge. I think overall on the ground, both of these guys are skilled and they could neutralize each other out. I know Brown is going to be going for the takedowns. I think that we're probably going to see Tuck stuff enough of those takedowns to keep it upright. And again, he does have an advantage on the feet. So I think we're going to probably see Tuck edge it out here in a very close competitive battle. So respect to both guys. I just have to lean with a better fighter, and I still believe that's Tuck. But, you know, I mean, like I said, part of me is very impressed with what Brown has accomplished, and I kind of like to see him keep winning a little bit and make a little bit of a run. I know he's not going to get that title shot anytime soon. He's not going to put himself in contention, but it's just good to see a guy that's been around the sport for so long, you know, have some success in the UFC. I guess that's what I'm getting at. But I do think he's going to probably lose this fight, so I'm going to pick Tuck to win.
I'm not super impressed with either guy. I mean, for the most part, this entire fight card, you're not really super impressed with a lot of guys on this card. But watching Damian Brown and John Tuck, Brown did step it up in that last fight. I mean, he faced a guy with a bad chin in Cesar Arzamandia, and he took care of business. That was after, you know, he got dominated by Alan Patrick in his UFC debut. And as we've seen, Alan Patrick is, you know, a lot better than people give him credit for. John Tuck, on the other hand, he ran into a problem that he's historically run into, which is when he faces a pretty decent fighter that can put pressure on him, he kind of wilts. So for this fight, it's all about whether or not Damian Brown can put a lot of pressure on John Tuck. Tuck is the more technically sound fighter compared to Brown. He's got 5 inches in reach on him. He is the better technical striker. Tuck probably has the better submission game compared to Brown, but Brown does have, I believe, the better offensive wrestling of the two, so I can see Brown getting some takedowns. And if he can get top position without getting swept or submitted, then this is a potentially winnable fight for him. When Brown gets top position, he does have some decent ground and pound. He can push a decent pace there. He could punish Tuck if Tuck gets lazy on his back. And sometimes he does stick around and screw around on his back a little too much. So for me, this fight boils down to whether or not Brown can push the pace on the feet and maybe pressure Tuck like Josh Emmett did in his last fight. I don't see Brown having as much success there. But it's all about whether or not Brown can get takedowns and stay in top position without getting wrapped up like a pretzel. And there's definitely a possibility that he pulls this off, but for the most part, I got to side with John Tuck. I just think he's too much more technical than Brown. And even though Tuck at times is passive, he actually does have a higher overall rate of volume with all of his strikes and activity compared to Brown. So I'm going to side with Tuck. I'm not super impressed with either guy, but I think it's a more winnable fight for Tuck. So he's going to be my pick. Now moving on to the preliminary card headliner, we have a middleweight contest between Daniel Kelly, who is 11-1, and Chris Camozzi, who is 24-11. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Camozzi -280 to come back on Kelly at +200. Right now it's Camozzi -245. Kelly is +205, so line margins have tightened up a little bit. Early on, there was a little bit more action coming in on Kelly, some buyback on Camozzi now as well. So two-way action in this fight seems like it's a steady line. Kind of a tough line. I can't believe I'm saying that. I mean, you got to respect Kelly. And the reason I'm saying that is because of Daniel Kelly. A lot of people, obviously, again, he's under the category of people not giving him much respect as far as the betting window, typically speaking. But, man, I mean, what can you say? If you have to give the guy credit. You have to give him some respect at this point. I mean, his win over Carlos Jr. in his last fight was more than impressive. I mean, the guy gutted things out, and he ended up taking over the fight and winning by knockout in the third round. So TKO, you know, it was impressive, man. I mean, Kelly, that's the type of fighter he is. He's got no quit in him. And in the fight before that against Montgomery, a lot of people thought Montgomery was going to take his head off. I mean, Montgomery, again, has some flaws. We all know that as well. But Kelly ended up getting the decision there as well. So he's been performing at a decent pace. I mean, decent for his age, I'm saying. 39 years old. Kelly definitely has okay cardio, you know, for his age. His stand-up ability, even though he's slow on the feet, he does have a little bit of power. He is aggressive. He, of course, has a judo background, so he's got some takedown ability. So the guy has skill. It's just one of those things. He's 39 years old, and again, the way he fights, especially on the feet, a little slow. Not, you know, the most flashiest fighter, so it's just doesn't seem like he'd be that effective, but he has been. So that being said, Camozzi stylistically should be kind of a bad matchup for him. If Kelly can't get this fight to the ground, I think Camozzi is going to have a big striking advantage in this fight. He's going to have a 6-inch reach advantage overall, I believe, here as well. Camozzi is getting more confidence. I mean, he, you know, after he's been, again, up and down in his UFC career, but I mean, typically speaking, he's been more up than down. I mean, he's had some quality wins. His last fight against Lightest, I mean, Lightest stylistically is a tough matchup for a lot of guys in the middleweight division. So you can't even, I'm not going to take that much away from Camozzi because Lightest is not Kelly. I mean, Kelly's definitely a step down for competition from there. But overall, I mean, again, Camozzi coming off wins like Watson, like Joe Riggs, and even Vitor Miranda, especially. I mean, those are some solid wins. So his confidence is at an all-time high behind before that loss to Leitis. And I don't think that loss is going to affect him that bad. I mean, he's rebounded nicely from losses before. So Kamozie has a striking advantage. His takedown defense is probably a little bit underrated. And I'm saying that because obviously the guys that are supposed to get him down usually do. But I think Kelly will struggle in this fight. And if Kamozie keeps it upright, I think Kamozie probably knocks him out, honestly. So I'm going to side with Kamozie in this fight. I think he gets back on track here, and he might put together another solid run coming up. So Kamozie is my pick.
And I can completely understand why you'd want to pick Kamozie. He should have a big edge here against Daniel Kelly on the feet. Kelly does have a little bit of power, and but for the most part, Kelly's biggest strength is getting top position in fights and then just unleashing some damage. And if Kamozie can avoid that, then he's going to be in great shape. The main thing here is just don't underestimate Kelly. You saw that in his last crazy win against Antonio Carlos Jr. Carlos Jr. was completely dominating that fight. He was one of the biggest favorites on the entire card. And then, boom. The second Carlos Jr. slowed down, Kelly just turned it up a notch and just started pounding him out. And Carlos Jr. had no response to it and ended up getting TKO'd. It was crazy. So Kamozie needs to keep his head in the game. Do not underestimate Daniel Kelly. And then just try to knock his block off on the feet without getting taken down. Kelly is not a technician on the feet. He's not that impressive overall. But somehow he has managed to get to 11-1 and has picked up a few wins in the UFC. So Kamozie, but for the most part, Kamozie has performed pretty well. I know he didn't look great in his last fight against Talis Latus, but before that, he was picking up a couple impressive stoppage victories inside the octagon. He's looked pretty solid in regards to pushing a high pace, keeping himself upright for the most part, and then just outworking people. And if he can do that, he can either win a decision against Kelly, but I can also see him getting a TKO victory, because if somebody got in Kelly's face and really started just landing strikes like Sam Alvey did, then they put him out. So I think Kamozie can find that same success, but if he doesn't, I can still see him just winning a decision. He just has to avoid getting tossed around with Kelly's judo and being put on his back. So if Kamozie can keep this fight in striking range instead of the phone booth or clinch, then he's going to be in really good shape. If not, then maybe there's an upset brewing. But I'm going to side with Chris Kamozie here. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a women's strawweight bout between Seohee Ham, who is 16-7, and Danielle Taylor, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Man, this should be a fun scrap. I open Ham -155 to come back on Taylor +115. Right now, it's Ham at -125. The comeback on Taylor is at +105. So a little bit more action coming in Taylor's way. I get it. I mean, honestly, Taylor, for being a smaller, I mean, as far as height goes, she's just a compact, short, little stocky fighter. I mean, at 115 pounds, she could probably make 105, of course, too. So she packs a heck of a punch. I mean, brutal knockout power, actually, for her size and weight, and especially for the female division. And I think a lot of people are banking on this being a little bit more of a fair fight compared to – I mean, her fight against Moroz, she performed well in that fight. There's no doubt about it. Moroz, of course, is kind of always in a mix – you know what I mean? As far as the weight class goes, she was kind of on the upper tier. So stepping in, Taylor, I believe she took that fight on short notice, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So she performed relatively well against Moroz. That being said, Ham is going to be closer to her size, and this should be a firefight back and forth. Ham is, again, technically sound. She has some ground skill to go along with her stand-up game. I mean, I'm more than impressed so far. Talk about being outsized. I mean, Ham has been there in pretty much every one of her fights as well. So she's used to it. So this is going to also be kind of a, I think, a breath of fresh air for her, fighting somebody more her size as well. So this should be, again, two fighters that are going to give it their all. I just think what it comes down to, Ham is going to be a little bit more active, a little bit busier. I think she's a little bit more technically sound on the feet. And I think she is the more diverse fighter overall. I think she's just a little bit more technically sound, even on the ground. But what it's going to come down to for Taylor is if she is able to get a little bit more active and land the hard punches, she could definitely steal this thing as well. So I think Taylor's going to be more of a threat on the feet, But Ham is going to be the one delivering more at a consistent pace. So I think this fight probably does go to the scorecards. And if so, I have to lean a little bit more towards Ham. But I think this really will be one of the best fights of the night. It should be fun. Both of these ladies deserve some credit and recognition. And you know, hopefully they have a fun fight and it gets them that. So my official pick is going to be Ham, though, to win this fight.
Yeah, this is going to be a fight that's all about striking volume versus striking power. Danielle Taylor definitely packs a serious punch. She has incredible one-punch knockout ability. So if she can connect with something really solid, then she could definitely knock out Seohi Ham. Seohi Ham, on the other hand, a.k.a. Hamderlei Silva, very extremely exciting and high-octane striker in the women's strawweight division. And these girls are probably the two tiniest in the entire strawweight division. If they wanted to, they could definitely be fighting at 105 pounds. If the UFC ever makes that division, they would be my first two candidates to drop down. But Seohi Ham, she is just all about pressure, pace, and activity, just getting in your grill and throwing a lot of kicks, a lot of punches, just really getting just moving forward, taking control of the center of the cage and forcing her opponent to react. Now, if Taylor has really been working on her counter-striking ability, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for her to land a huge counter. But that being said, sometimes if someone is just pushing a high enough pace, it's very tough to get a counter opportunity in because you just don't really get a chance to catch your breath. So that's what I'm expecting here is I'm expecting Ham to really force Taylor to be defensive, but every once in a while, Taylor's probably going to explode forward with a big shot trying to knock Ham's head off. And if she lands with that big shot, no doubt about it, she can win this fight. But if she doesn't, if she's forced to be too defensive and she's too tentative on the feet and she doesn't maybe get a takedown or anything, then I see Seohi Ham winning a decision, maybe even a late TKO, but at least a decision. So I'm going to side with Seohi Ham, but I'm not crazy confident about it because Danielle Taylor is not someone to be underestimated. So my pick is going to be officially, though, Seohi Ham. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Khalil Rountree, who is 5-1, taking on Tyson Pedro, who is 4-1. Taking on Tyson Pedro, who's 4-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Rountree, minus 135, the comeback on Pedro at minus 105. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is currently with Rountree minus 150, the comeback on Pedro at plus 130. So more action coming in Rountree's way. I get it. Pedro's a big-time unknown for a lot of people out there. I mean, he's actually an Aussie, so he's a local guy. An Aussie fighter, so he's kind of popular, actually, in that realm. I mean, in his home area, I guess you could say, he's definitely like I don't want to say low-level celebrity, but he's got some popularity. He's got some hype. He's only 24 years old, and he actually kind of called the UFC out and said, hey, look, you guys are having a card in my backyard. Put me on this card. I could definitely show you that I belong. So the UFC granted him his wish and brought him on here, so he's got a stiff test, though, in Rountree. I mean, Rountree is a beast on the feet. The guy has devastating knockout power. Again, another Ultimate Fighter vet. Unfortunately for him, he lost in the finals to Andrew Sanchez. And why he lost that fight was because Sanchez was able to exploit Rountree's ground game, and that's definitely his kryptonite. Now, he's been working very hard, of course, Rountree has, because he knows that that's his flaw. So he's going to be the type of fighter that improves. He's still young as well, only 26 years old. Putting in the work, he's got the athleticism. He's going to address that area, and he's going to get better. But at this point right now, it's going to be tough because in this spot, he's flying to Pedro's backyard, and Pedro is that type of fighter. I mean, he goes for takedowns. That's what he excels at. He excels at going for the takedown, utilizing his wrestling and his submission skills. So stylistically, this is a tough matchup for both fighters because I think Pedro on the feet, he can hang a little bit with Rountree, but he don't want to keep it there long because, I mean, as it plays out, Pedro has enough power and, again, athleticism in his own right that he definitely has enough power to maybe knock Rountree out. But common sense says that it's probably going to go the other way. The more time you spend on the feet with Rountree, you're going to probably get knocked out yourself. So Pedro doesn't want to play that game. He wants to obviously test the waters a little bit standing up, but then get this fight to the ground as soon as he can. So stylistically, Rountree wants to keep this fight up and go for the knockout over Pedro, which he is going to have the advantage in that area. And Pedro's going to want to get this floor down to the floor and utilize his strength in this fight too. So matchups, and it depends on who utilizes their game plan the best. Now, getting a little bit more detail, I guess most people know about Rountree. Again, he's a little bit more because of the Ultimate Fighter show and, you know, more recent in all of our minds. But with Pedro, he actually trains with Tehuna. Again, I mentioned he's a very hyped Australian prospect. He's big, strong, athletic. A lot to like about him. But again, he's still a little bit raw. So this is definitely a big step up in competition for him. But I think it's a step that he could probably pass. So I'm going to go his way because I think the way he matches up with Rountree, again, I think he could be Rountree's kryptonite. So I think Pedro does get this fight to the ground. And if so, I mean, from what I've been able to see, again, it's not much. There's not much available on Pedro out there. But what you can see is you can see his potential on the ground to get the look for the submission right away. And I think he's going to throw everything he's got at Rountree and probably look to get the job done early once he gets it to the ground. So I do believe Pedro is going to just be a bad stylistic matchup for Rountree, but dangerous fight for him for sure. He's got to be cautious, but I think he gets the W here, so I'm picking him to win.
And I'm not real confident about either guy. Rountree has some tremendous striking talent, but he got completely exposed on the ground in his UFC debut on that tough finale against Sanchez. And Tyson Pedro is just a bit of a complete unknown. I mean, there has been a little bit of hype around him as a up-and-coming Aussie prospect, but we don't know a lot about the guy. I mean, he does have some background. He's been training in mixed martial arts his whole life, but for the most part, he's only had the four fights of professional experience, and none of them have been against, you know, top-level guys. So this is by far the toughest test of his entire career. And he should definitely have an advantage should the fight go to the ground. I think Rountree is only a blue belt or something in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So if Pedro can get the fight to the floor and get top position, he should be in pretty good shape. But if he doesn't, then Rountree is an exceptional talent on the feet. I mean, don't underestimate his stand-up. I mean, the guy clearly knows what he's doing there. He has great footwork, really good power, fast hands, really powerful kicks. And if Pedro chooses to stand and bang with him, I can see Rountree getting a first round knockout. I mean, the guy definitely has that ability. So I'm just going to side with the devil I know here, and I'm going to go with Khalil Rountree, but the main basis is just, I just think Pedro is a little too untested at this point. I could be completely wrong and Pedro could come in here and light the world on fire, but I just need to see it before I can believe it. So I'm going to side with Khalil Rountree. Now, moving down to the lightweight division, we have Yusuke Kisuya, who is 9-2, taking on Alex Volkanovski, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'll put Volkanovski -190, the comeback, and Kisuya at +150. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's 160 for Volkanovski, +140 for Kisuya. So 10-cent drop in the dog, but there is two-way action coming into this fight too. And line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. I thought the more hype would be on Volkanovski a little bit more. So honestly, the line should probably be even closer than what it still is out there right now at -160, -140. And that being said, because I just think Kisuya is probably not going to get the respect that he deserves. And Volkanovski is one of these prospects, again, that's from Australia. He's definitely a hyped fighter that a lot of people believe he's got a lot of potential, and he can make some waves at the lightweight division, even the featherweight division possibly, because the guy's small enough that he could probably – and he has fought at featherweight before. He's kind of bounced up and down a little bit throughout. So after this fight, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Volkanovski actually drop to 145. Probably suits him a little bit better because of his size. But that being said, Volkanovski trains with that Tiger Muay Thai camp. They have a lot of fighters on this card from that camp as well. He really does have a well-rounded skill set overall, but on the feet, he definitely has speed and power and the ability to knock you out with one punch. I mean, his countering ability is what I've been impressive with as well. So his boxing's very solid. He works his jab well. And again, he's got a huge right hand to back his stand-up game up. He even throws in some leg kicks, and his clinch work's pretty solid as well. And he's more of, believe it or not, more of a grinder. I mean, from what I've seen of him thus far, is he does have all that I just said on the feet, but he looks to take the fight to the ground. he uses his, utilizes wrestling pretty well, and he looks to get a sub. I mean, he's not like inactive on the ground either. He's aggressive. He drops some ground and pound, and he looks to get the job done on the floor. So this guy is definitely a finisher in all aspects of the fight. So Kasuya is definitely going to have to be careful, but Kasuya's no slouch either. I mean, his debut against Hine, I thought was actually pretty good. I mean, he was still pushing a high pace towards the end. I mean, he was trying to win that fight. He just got outclassed a little bit behind, but he was pretty competitive in that fight. And Hine, of course, I think gets respect from most of us across the board as far as his skill set goes. He's definitely not an easy out. But Kasuya basically is a submission artist. He's definitely has some unorthodox takedown ability at times. His striking game for a grappling-based fighter is actually not that bad either. I mean, again, look back – you know, some of his previous fights, but even in the Hine fight, I mean, he was hanging with Hine. Hine was beating him on the feet, but he was hanging in there okay. Again, for more of a grappling based fighter, that is. So, all in all, I've been pretty impressed with Kasuya. I mean, he's not going to be a gimme fight for Volkanovski at all. I think this is going to be a relatively close competitive fight, even if it does stay standing on the feet. I think Kasuya will probably give as much as he takes. So this is another one of these coin flip type of scenarios for me, because I do think the hype around Volkanovski is a little bit too much right now, and Kasuya is going to prove to be a tougher test than most people think. But with all that being said, I still have to lean a little bit slightly towards Volkanovski, because I do give him a little bit more of the stand-up edge, and I think these guys could probably neutralize each other out on the ground, or Volkanovski might get top position from time to time here on the ground as well. And Kasuya, although he is a submission artist, I'd like him to be maybe a little bit more aggressive off his back. So Volkanovski, I think, can weather that storm and not get submitted if he does get on top position either. So that being said, slight lean towards Volkanovski to get the W here, but another competitive matchup.
Yeah, I think this fight's going to be a little bit closer than people give it credit for. Kasuya's UFC, lone UFC appearance was against Nick Hine, and that was a competitive fight. Honestly, it was very close, and Kasuya held his own in the stand-up portion against Hine. It was a fight that potentially could have gone either way. Now, Volkanovski is definitely the guy making his debut that is getting the most hype here. I mean, he is on a tremendous win streak. He does have a couple wins over a few decent prospects in the Australian circuit. He does have a win over a UFC vet and Anton Zafir. Now, granted, Zafir wasn't a very good UFC fighter, but it was still it's a quality win, and that's a guy that has fought higher weight classes too. So Volkanovski is going to be giving up some size here. I mean, this is a guy that has fought at featherweight quite a few times. So, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him eventually drop down to the featherweight division in the UFC. But Volkanovski is well-rounded, has excellent takedown game, has a lot of power. So he can potentially put Kasuya out if he can connect with something really heavy on the feet, or if he can get top position on the ground and just start dropping bombs. My only issue here is Kasuya is going to have a little bit of size and potentially some strength on him. So Kasuya could just make Volkanovski work really hard to get anything going in this fight, and Volkanovski could get tired. Now, if Volkanovski gets frustrated in this fight, there is going to be a window of opportunity for Kasuya to either get a late finish or maybe just win a decision. But that being said, I do think Volkanovski has the wrestling. He has the power. He has the overall mixed martial arts ability to win this fight, even though he is going to be a little bit undersized. So I'm going to side with Volkanovski, but don't sleep on Kasuya, especially if Volkanovski really has to struggle to find success in that first round. But my pick is going to be Volkanovski. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Kyle Noak, who is 22-9-1, taking on Omari Akhmedov, who is 16-3. Now Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put this fight exactly pick on -120 either way, and Akhmedov is definitely the one that's getting the support early on. Akhmedov is now -175. The comeback on Noak is at +155. I'm, I guess, a little bit surprised. Akhmedov is not – I mean, he's not one guy that is unflawed. You know, it's not like I think people are fading Noak because, I mean, he's 36 years old. He's been in the UFC for a long time. I realize this, and, again, he's been kind of on a roller coaster rise roller coaster ride at times throughout his UFC career. And of course, losing to Nakamura, which is not a bad loss in a way. I mean, a little bit surprising, you know, maybe that he got finished, I guess, in the second, but still, I mean, Nakamura has a great ground game. He's got underrated, obviously, takedowns. And anyway, that's a whole other situation. But I guess I'm just trying to think why people are fading Nook so bad, because before that, I mean, his loss to Morano was actually probably not a loss. The judges thought so, but it was Nook probably did enough to win that fight, and he looked really impressive against Saboto. So it's not like the guy is on a huge decline right now, and he's just looked awful, and he's just at that point where everybody's going to pretty much beat him in his career. Now, Akhmedov, of course, the guy definitely is a threat. I mean, the guy has power on the feet. The guy has wrestling. He's got a little bit of a submission game in his own right as well. So I understand the guy has some skill, and he could definitely challenge Nook, especially early on in this fight. I think round one, Akhmedov probably wins. I mean, but I don't know if he's going to finish Nook in round one. So as the fight progresses, Akhmedov has horrible cardio. We all know that. I mean, he's been a front runner in several fights, and he's come back, and, you know, the other people have ended up finishing him as well. And then to me, I mean, his Gunnar Nelson performance, again, Gunnar Nelson is an absolute stud, so I understand it's not a bad loss for Akhmedov, but the way he went about that fight just bothers me. I mean, he wasn't in it at all. I mean, he was kind of intimidated throughout the fight, and it really showed. So that sits in the back of my mind that he definitely has some mental weakness going on there as well. So both these guys actually have trained at Jackson's camp. I'm sure they've worked out together in the past as well. Nook is obviously sticking with the Jackson camp for this fight. I just recently saw, you know, some social media pictures or whatever, and Jackson's in his corner still. So Akhmedov must have traveled and went somewhere else for this fight. I'm not exactly sure what the exact situation is there with Akhmedov, but obviously they're still not training together for this fight because they're fighting each other. So that being said, they know each other probably fairly well. I think that's what this is going to come down to, is it can Nook weather the early storm? Because if he does, I think he probably wins round two and round three, and possibly even gets a finish over Akhmedov. So I understand, again, that a lot of people probably fade Nook because he's a 36-year-old vet that's been around for a long time, but I don't think he's quite done yet. And Akhmedov, if anybody, I mean, this is actually a pretty decent fight for Nook because he has a guy that's vulnerable to getting beat late as the fight goes. And he probably knows this as well. So they're going to be prepared. And I think that, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Nook go down. Like I said, Akhmedov definitely has the skill to do it, but I don't trust Akhmedov either. So those of you guys that are going crazy betting him, I mean, you're braver than I am, I guess, to be backing a guy like Akhmedov, even at a low price. So I would stay away from Akhmedov laying a price at all on him. And I mean, it's definitely a dog or pass situation right now. So I'm going to pick Nook to win this fight. Hopefully he can withstand the early part of this fight and comes back and gets the job done here.
Yeah, Kyle Nook, Omari Akhmedov. There's a couple things here that are making me side a little bit more with Nook, actually. First things first, chin strength. Akhmedov has been now TKO'd or knocked out in his last two fights, both in the third round as he started to slow down. Striking technique, you definitely have to favor Kyle Nook. He showcased some pretty impressive ability to attack both the head and body. Now, Nook did wilt under the pressure of Nakamura in his last fight. He started pretty solidly there, but then just Nakamura just stayed in his face, and either Nook had an injury or something, just wilted and ended up losing. So that is a concern. Nook has had a little bit of trouble with wrestlers in the past. He's been taken down. You know, Patrick Ote took him down. Nakamura took him down. So I can see why some people are siding with Akhmedov here, but the main problem I have with Akhmedov is he has not been able to keep that pace up over the course of three rounds, and when he starts to slow down, people take advantage. Sergio Moraes, a guy that is not known for his knockout power, was able to put Akhmedov out cold. And then, I mean, in his last fight against Zaleski, I mean, Akhmedov just got steamrolled. So, in that third round. So, as long as Kyle Nook can weather that early storm from Akhmedov and not get put away, then I think Nook's conditioning should be better than Akhmedov's. Nook's striking technique should be better, and his chin should be better. So if he could just make it to that late second round, early third round, or even, hell, if he just lands a really good punch in the beginning of the fight, it's not like Akhmedov's chin is only bad in the third round. It's bad at all times. So if No connects with anything really solid before Akhmedov could even get a takedown, then I can see him getting a knockout. So I'm going to side with Kyle No here. I think that this is a winnable fight for him, and I think he pulls it off. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the lightweight division, we have Jake Matthews, who is 11-2, taking on Andrew Holbrook, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Matthews -350, the comeback on Holbrook at +250. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Matthews -300. The comeback on Holbrook is at +250. Early action did come in on Holbrook, line dropped. We're seeing some action come back up to Matthews. That's why it settled basically at where it opened. Line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. So two-way action on this fight. I mean, I've been more impressed by far with Matthews. Matthews is a young gun. I mean, he's only 22 years old, and he's got a really good stand-up game. He's got really solid wrestling. He's got good jiu-jitsu. I mean, the guy's got it all, and he's got potential to really make a run eventually for the lightweight title. I mean, that's how good this guy can be. Again, only 22 years old, so he's going to address some of the flaws that he's got. I mean, unfortunately for him, I thought he was going to actually perform a bit better than he did in his last fight against Kevin Lee. I mean, I give credit to Lee. I mean, that was, I thought, stylistically a difficult matchup for Kevin Lee. And Lee was able to get the fight to the ground, get superior position, and finish that fight off. So great win for Lee, a setback for Matthews, and he's looking to rebound here. But Holbrook is exactly the type of fighter that, I mean, at least on paper, stylistically, could give Matthews some problems. I mean, Holbrook is a grappling-based fighter. He's going to look to get this fight to the ground, look to get position over Matthews, look to sub him. If he can't sub him, I mean, look, he might, you know, follow the same path to victory that Lee had there, just get dominant position, start pounding away, and the referee might stop it. So that's what Holbrook is going to look to do in this fight. But that being said, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that easy because Lee is on a different level, I think, than even Holbrook. Again, Holbrook's been pretty impressive with his grappling. I understand that. I get that throughout his career, even though I do think he should have lost that fight against Ninja. I think he got kind of gifted that. He had his moments in that fight for sure, but I still think Ninja actually won that fight. So realistically, he could be 0-2 in the UFC right now, fighting against a young gun in Matthews that's on the rise. So I don't know. I just think that Holbrook's best chance to win this fight is doing what I just said. I mean, getting the fight to the ground and just dominating Matthews there. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think Matthews should be able to sprawl brawl. I think Matthews might even get top position on this fight. And if he does get top position on the ground, I don't think Holbrook is going to sub him off his back. I mean, it's possible. Holbrook is pretty slick with his submissions and transitions overall and the scrambling ability. So it's possible. I think Matthews should just fight the smart game plan, pick Holbrook apart on the feet, maybe push him up against the cage a little bit, just kind of grind him out, but in a smart way, and then just, again, put his hands on him and try to get rid of him that way. So obviously Holbrook is a little bit susceptible. He got knocked out in his last fight to Silva. So, I mean, Matthews can definitely follow that same path. So for me, I think Matthews does rebound here. This is a nice fight to get him back on track, but he does have to be careful and worry about Holbrook's ground just a little bit. But other than that, I mean, I really do think Matthews gets back on track and he rolls. He probably gets a highlight reel finish here as well.
Yeah, as we saw in Holbrook's last fight, he is very susceptible on the feet. Now, clearly Holbrook is a strong competitor on the canvas, has almost all of his career victories on the ground by way of a decision or submission. So I would expect that Holbrook wants to close the distance on this fight and get it to the floor as quickly as possible, because even though Jake Matthews primarily has been a ground fighter throughout his career, that's where he's also been most vulnerable. You saw him get choked out by James Vick, and then most recently, Kevin Lee just put the pressure on him on the ground with repeated takedowns, and then just overwhelmed him a little bit just by brute force, and was able to get a submission against him as well. So if Holbrook can close the distance, get this fight to the floor, and just start going to work with his technique, there's definitely a path to victory for him. That being said, Jake Matthews is rounding out his game pretty well. You saw in the Johnny Case fight that his stand-up has come a long way. He actually got the better of Case for the most part on the feet. Now, I know Case was probably a little more concerned about the takedowns, so that allowed Matthews to get things going on the feet. But still, that's impressive that he has developed at that point. So if Matthews could just keep this fight standing, then he should be in a good position. He is definitely the better striker. His chin is a bit susceptible, as you saw in the Areola fight, but I don't think Holbrook possesses really any danger in the stand-up at all with power or striking technique. So I think if Matthews can just, as Nick mentioned, sprawl and brawl, keep this fight standing, then the finish is going to come at some point, because Holbrook does not have a good chin, does not have very good striking defense, and unless he can get this fight to the floor, I think Holbrook's going to be in a lot of trouble. So I'm going to side with Jake Matthews as well, the hometown Australian kid. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a middleweight contest between Robert Whittaker, who is 17-4, and Derek Brunson, who is 16-3. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Brunson -155, the comeback on Whittaker +115. Right now it's Brunson -145, the comeback on Whittaker is +125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit in this spot as well. There is two-way action coming in this fight. It is a tough one, man. I mean, both these guys have looked phenomenal. I mean, you got two of the top 10 ranked guys going at it at middleweight here. Whittaker, of course, since he's moved up to middleweight, has looked like he hasn't really missed a beat. I mean, the guy is more than impressive, especially on the feet. If you look at some of his performances, I mean, you would think stylistically the Uriah Hall fight for him recently that he had a couple fights back would be a tough matchup for him, because Uriah Hall is that unorthodox striker, powerful striker, a guy that could probably stand up and have some success against a guy like Whittaker. Whittaker, man, I mean, even though that was definitely a fight, I mean, Hall had his moments in that fight. Whittaker was nothing but impressive in that fight against a very dangerous opponent and a guy like Uriah Hall. Now, I guarantee a lot of people are going to mention, oh, Brunson just beat Hall too, so what's the big deal? And Brunson got rid of him quick-like. But still, I mean, I understand you got to give Brunson credit for that, but I still think going three rounds against a dangerous striker like that, I understand Brunson got rid of him, but Whittaker was able to impress, I think, throughout three rounds against a guy that was dangerous throughout the whole time. So in my opinion, Whittaker's chin is holding up decent. His strike defense has improved a little bit. His cardio has improved a little bit too. And those are all question marks I've had in the past with him. But in his hands, Whittaker has dynamite. I mean, the guy can definitely knock most people out in any weight class he fights in. I mean, that's how special the guy's knockout power is. He's got the ability to keep the fight upright in most cases as well, so he can sprawl and brawl. I mean, the guy is hard to deal with on the feet. Now, Brunson, on the other hand, again, he's been looking great. I mean, I just mentioned how he did get that win over Hall. I mean, a striker versus wrestler type of matchup stylistically should have been, and Brunson was the one to get the knockout over the striker. So impressive, and it wasn't just Hall. I mean, his win over Carnero. Carnero, again, honestly, I don't think he should be fighting at middleweight, so he kind of fought a blown up, I don't know if it's fair to say, but kind of a blown up welterweight in that spot there. But his win over Alvey. Alvey's a tough guy, man. I mean, Alvey's not easy to get rid of. That was impressive too. Brunson goes out there and knocks him out. Herman, again, I'm not sure how much you could take into that, because he's definitely had so many wars throughout his career that his chin, even though he's always had a solid chin, that chin is definitely a little bit more susceptible these days. So still some question marks with Brunson on the feet, but for a grinder, for a wrestling stylist, he's definitely performed well, even in the stand-up area. So, and then I think personally, I mean, Romero right now is probably going to be the next to fight for the championship belt. And Brunson was the one that tested Romero more than anybody. I mean, Brunson was winning that fight before he got knocked out late. So that's impressive as well. So a lot of good things to like about Brunson. I mean, he is a very complete fighter, but in this spot, he's going to be smart probably. Look for the takedowns, because that's where he's going to have the biggest advantage. I don't think he's going to want to stand and bang too long for Whittaker. If he does, that's probably going to be a mistake. So hopefully he throws his ego out the window and not want to prove that he can strike with one of the best strikers in the middleweight division and utilize his strength. Because if he does that, then he might have a little bit of success. I mean, Whittaker's takedown defense, I mentioned, is pretty solid, but if anybody can get him to the floor, it's a guy like Brunson. So that's, I think, the game plan he wants to implement here, even maybe try to get Whittaker out there by sub, because Brunson has some subs to go along with that wrestling as well. So tough fight. I think it's basically, I mean, a throwback type of fight where you have your striker versus wrestler. And I think I'm going to have to lean with the striker that sprawls and brawls a little bit more. I mean, Brunson has been knocked out. If anything you can say about him, his chin has been suspect at times. Again, recently he hasn't showed it too much, but it's been there in the past. So you give me a guy that's been knocked out a couple times fighting a guy that's going to hit him harder maybe than anybody's hit him in the past, I'll go with it, especially a guy that seems to have decent takedown defense, even though he moved up to middleweight. So I think Whittaker is getting better. He's only 25 years old. He's getting better fight by fight, getting more confidence. Again, I said he's addressed some of those issues that he's had in the past a little bit, and I think he's going to keep on improving those areas as well. So another tough one. I mean, another coin flip type of fight again. I mean, this card from top to bottom There's a bunch of competitive matchups. This is not an easy card to dissect. Not a lot of big names on this card either, but this fight is going to be the one that actually carries the whole card as far as name recognition and popularity and importance, because both these guys, a win for Whitaker definitely goes a long way for him as far as getting closer to a title shot. And the same thing for Brunson. A win over Whitaker is going to get him one step closer as well. So this is an important fight for the middleweight division. And it's a tough one, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Whitaker. I think Whitaker can probably get the job done and win this fight by knockout. So that's the way I'm going to go.
Honestly, this fight could go either way. Robert Whitaker has the technical striking advantage. He has the advantage in overall output. But Derek Brunson does have the wrestling. And more importantly, he has been absolutely steamrolling people in his last four fights. And he's been steamrolling people that don't historically get steamrolled. It started with Ed Herman. Now Herman has been knocked out a few times since then, but basically Brunson just obliterated Ed Herman in the first round. Then he took on Sam Alvey, obliterates Sam Alvey in the first round, which is something no one has really been able to do. And then Rowan Carnero smokes him in the first round, doesn't even get hit. And then most recently, took him four strikes against Uriah Hall to take him out in the first round. Now, there was a little bit of controversy with the stoppage, but, I mean, hell, if they don't stop that fight, he just keeps punching Uriah Hall and the fight's over anyway. So, if Brunson connects, he is definitely one of the most powerful, scariest fighters in the middleweight division. So, Whitaker has to keep Brunson off of him. The one thing that is a huge question mark is, what happens if Brunson doesn't take his opponent out in the first round? We've seen him struggle a little bit if fights go a little longer. This is a 5-round fight, so that is something to seriously consider. Robert Whitaker has looked pretty good since moving up to the middleweight division. I mean, honestly, really good. It started with his win over Clint Hester, where he just basically outworked Hester and ends up getting a second-round knockout. Then he took on Brad Tavares and just mopped the floor with Tavares. And then his win over Uriah Hall was a lot more workmanlike, where he just put pressure on Hall and forced Hall into making mistakes and landed some good shots. Hall started slowing down and being a lot more tentative in that fight, wasn't as willing to engage because Whitaker was moving forward and still countering him. And then most recently, Whitaker just outpointed Rafael Natal over the course of 3 rounds. Now, if Whitaker can get his overall technique flowing, then he's going to be in a good position to win this fight. It's just all about avoiding that early blitz from Derek Brunson and also avoiding the wrestling. Now, that's not going to be easy. I mean, Brunson is extremely quick, very athletic, and as he's shown, his power is as dangerous and has the ability to finish a fight as good as anybody in the entire welterweight division. So, and Whitaker has been hurt and rocked and knocked out in fights before. Stephen Thompson just completely crushed him. But even before Stephen Thompson, Whitaker was having some trouble in the welterweight division before moving up. Now, maybe some of that was because he had a brutal weight cut, but you can't forget that, he got rocked against Colton Smith. He got outstruck by Court McGee, and then he got finished really badly by Stephen Thompson. So those are all negatives on his career record here. Now, granted, all of that stuff happened in the welterweight division. Since moving up to middleweight, he has looked like a new man. But there definitely is potential for Brunson to put him out. That being said, Brunson is, he's not an iron chin guy either. Yoel Romero was able to knock him out in the third round after Brunson had won the first 2 rounds against him. Jacare Souza, granted this was way back in Strikeforce, Brunson has gotten a lot better since then, but Jacare just completely obliterated him with a first round knockout as well. So those are things you have to put into consideration while weighing how this fight is going to play out. So if it boils down to a technical striking battle, Robert Whitaker is going to win. If Derek Brunson runs out of gas, Robert Whitaker is going to win. But if there's a finish in this fight, especially in the first round or two, then I think Derek Brunson is going to win, because just with the pace he pushes, with the power that he has in his hands, and with his ability to potentially put his opponent on their back and then just beat him up, then he has a good position, an opportunity to win this fight inside the distance. But if he cannot finish Robert Whittaker, the longer this fight goes, I think the better I like Robert Whittaker. So I'm siding with Derek Brunson because of just the way he's been performing lately and taking people out. But with this being a 5-round fight, and if they're pacing themselves a little bit more, then the opportunity is definitely there for Whittaker to win this contest. But overall, I am going to pick Derek Brunson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 101. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.